Hello and welcome back to another episode of Dark and Deadly, and this is our Halloween bonus episode. We are your hosts. I'm Haley.
And I'm Gina.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween.
You're not going to dress up as anything this year, are you?
No, we already took down our Halloween decorations and everything, so we didn't have kids come. Just so everyone knows, I don't know if I mentioned this last week. Probably not, because we weren't sick yet. I've had COVID, so I've been down and out for a little over a week now. It's not been fun, but I'm feeling better. I got the antibody treatment, been taking zinc and vitamin D and vitamin C. So I think I'm slowly turning a corner.
Which is good.
Not curve, but it's not been. Don't get COVID, guys. Or if you do, vitamin D, zinc, and vitamin C.
Yes. When I had it though, like the zinc made me like super sick, just like really? Nauseous. Yeah. I could not take the zinc.
My mom's doctor gave her some nausea pills. So those helped her.
That's good. Yeah. Cause they were like, you need to pretty much overdose on vitamin C and zinc. And I was like, I would love to, but I will throw up everywhere. So
it doesn't taste great. I do admit that it does not taste great.
Well, yeah. And it's just like when you're like sick like that and you can't taste anything, like we were talking about this before we started recording, but nothing tastes good. So it's like, I don't feel like eating. And then you take mm-hmm. stuff on an empty stomach and it just is a vicious cycle.
I've thrown up vitamins before because I took them on an empty stomach. It was the weirdest thing because I took my vitamins, took them with a glass of water. And then I was walking around and you get that feeling in your mouth of like the, it's like acid and you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Panic.
I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Well, isn't this a consequence of my own actions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like my favorite saying ever.
Me too.
This isn't the consequences of my own actions.
I watched a TikTok, totally unrelated, but I watched a TikTok of a lady who had given her two boys like a pregnancy test to go give her husband, and he had literally had a vasectomy appointment like the day before.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. And in one of the comments, somebody said, well, isn't this a consequence of my own actions? It's just funny.
Where is that saying from? Why do I feel like it's a Michael Scott saying?
Every time I
say it, I just get this distinct Michael Scott face in my head.
It would be a 100% something he would say. It's kind of along the lines of
tables.
Yep. Exactly. I say that all the time and people look at me and I'm like, okay, well, you don't watch The Office.
Well, and then how he just stood there after he said it and then moved on. I miss The Office. Where were we?
Yeah, where were we? So today we're going to be covering two murders that took place on the spookiest night of the year. Did you want to go first or do you want me to go first today?
I'll go first. Can you hear okay. Sarge panting?
No.
Okay. He's panting in the background. Lay down.
That's okay. My dog is barking at somebody riding their bicycle, so that's great.
Okay. So the case I'm talking about today is about Rebecca Gay. And I'm going to start this off a little bit different. I'm going to tell you about who the murderer is. And we're going to go through what a psychopath and gross, disgusting human being he is first. Because I think it kind of explains where we're going with the story. Right. And you can understand.
I know that a lot of people don't like care to hear about murderers and stuff beforehand, but the psychology behind that is very interesting to me. So I like to hear about both the victims and the murderers. So I'm glad you're doing that.
Well, and we're actually going to go over the women he hurt before he hurt Rebecca Gay or murdered her. Cause he has more than one victim. This man has three victims that we know about. Personally, I think that there's probably more and we'll go over why.
Okay.
So the man's name is John White, a 55-year-old ex-convict who had already been to prison for brutally attacking a woman in 1980. So this was not his first rodeo, like I said. He had invited his 17-year-old downstairs neighbor to his house. He attacked her and he stabbed her 15 times and choked her. So you're being stabbed 15 times. In my head, I'm like, oh, you died, right?
Yeah.
Like that's 15 times. That's brutal.
And she's somehow 17.
17 year old. Yeah. So I didn't include her name there, but I didn't include her name because she was underage. She somehow miraculously survived the attack and was able to tell the police his chilling last, what he thought was his last words to her. You're going to go now. I'm really sorry you had to go like this, but what the fuck? You're just a woman.
What?
Right. So he obviously thought she was going to die. And that's the last things that she's going to hear in this world is what the fuck? You're just a woman.
What an asshole.
Depraved. He's a lunatic. So he was just 22 at the time. Barely an adult at this point. Like,
brain hasn't even fully developed.
His brain hasn't even fully developed and he's already done this. It was unprovoked. Jeez. Wasn't like they got into an argument. He invited her up and then immediately started attacking her. The sick thing is that he went to prison for this, appealed the sentence, and won on grounds that his attorney did not raise the insanity defense. I agree with this. Dude's obviously insane. But yeah. He was out of prison within 2 years of being convicted and only within 2 years of probation.
Can you imagine how terrifying that would be for her? Because in my mind, I would think he'd be coming back for me to finish what he started.
Haley, get this. The woman he attacked had no idea that White was out of prison. And a few years later, recognized his voice while standing in line at the grocery store and turned around to see White smiling at her.
Oh my, I would die. I would go into cardiac arrest.
You right do. There. You hear this voice, right? I'd pee my pants. I'd start screaming. The cops didn't tell her. The state didn't warn her, like, hey, he's getting out of prison. Just FYI, we want you to know. Are you kidding me? So this is like a big failure. And again, it's like 1983 at this point. It's a failure on the justice system that no one informed his victim, who he attempted to murder, that he was getting out of prison. That is completely not okay. Victims should 100% be the first people that are notified that he's appealing the sentence in the first place and that he got out. And he was on probation, so why didn't the probation office tell her, like, hey, FYI, the guy who attacked you is getting out of prison. You need to be aware.
I would be livid, honestly.
His second victim was Vicky Sue Wall from Michigan. White was married and had two children and a third on the way at this point. So he has now had a life. He's been out of prison at this point for 11 years because this is July of 1994. Vicky was a 26-year-old who disappeared in July. So he had waited 14 years to attack his next victim, which that timeline for somebody who so has been so brutal makes me think that in that 14 years, there had to have been someone else. Because this wasn't his first, like, he's had three victims at this point throughout his life.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for somebody who's that brutal, you're going to have other victims.
Right. I think so too.
Because we're seeing like a pattern emerge a little bit.
Yeah. And when there's that big of a break, I just think that people went without reporting it.
Well, I mean, you do have instances where serial killers do go dormant, like BTK.
Yeah.
He did go dormant for how many years? 20 plus or something ridiculous like that. So like it can happen. I don't know. A lot of his stuff was sexually motivated a bit. So we'll never know for sure, unfortunately. So Vicky and John were having an affair, which is a big no-no. The cops knew that she was with White because there was security footage of her getting into his black truck the night she disappeared outside of a grocery store. So she went missing. People reported her as missing. They reviewed where her last steps were, found that she was at a grocery store, looked at the security footage, could see her getting into a black truck. they got the license plate. They knew who she was with prior, you know, to her going disappearing. When he was questioned, he admitted he was having an affair with her, but said he had dropped her off and hadn't seen her since. He dropped her off safely. She, last he knew, she was fine. The cops didn't necessarily believe this and were very suspicious, and he was being kept as a person of interest in the case. It didn't sit well with detectives, especially when he clammed up and refused to talk to them again and refused to take a lie detector test. So instantly that alerted the cops to like, there's something suspicious going on. He's unwilling to talk to us. We have a missing victim that he was having an affair with. They're putting two to two together and saying, okay, he's more than likely the person that did it.
Right.
Vicky's body was found a few weeks later, only a couple miles from where he had picked her up. So 2 miles away in like a rural area, they found her body. It was so badly decomposed that they couldn't tell what had actually happened to her. Much like Ryan Laundrie.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on there? So they weren't able to determine exactly what had happened to her. But because they had found the body, they had enough to search his car. Since he was the last person with her, she was last seen in his truck. They got a search warrant, looked through his truck, and they did find blood. But there wasn't enough blood to conclusively say that she was murdered in the truck.
So he just transported her.
Possibly. Or he hurt her in the truck, like hit her head on something, did something. I mean, her blood was in his truck. Regardless of anything else, her blood was in the truck.
Yeah.
John ended up pleading no contest in voluntary manslaughter charges and received a 8 to 15 year sentence in prison. So he was convicted. He did get a medium amount of time for murdering the woman he was having an affair with.
Well, I don't think any amount of time is good enough when you take a life other than life. So
honestly, same, unless it's like involuntary manslaughter, you hit somebody with your car. Yeah. Those are instances where I'm like, I get it, because you didn't mean to, but somebody died at your hands, but you didn't. Like, you didn't.
Yeah, you didn't intentionally kill
some. I'm sorry, but he intentionally killed her.
Yeah.
Don't care what you say. He did it. The man's sick, obviously. While in prison, he admitted to having violent sexual fantasies with women's dead bodies. So this is like some Ted Bundy shit that we're dealing with now. He's getting into necrophilia. At that point, he's so far down the reservation. It's ridiculous. He served 12 years in prison, and I use air quotes here because who knows if this is actually true, but all reports say that he turned to God in prison and found Jesus, which I mean, like, people do find God in prison, but usually their lives turn around after this. They've like handed over all their past to God, and they're really, I think people who find God in prison for the most part are completely changed people.
Like, right. And then, but then there's also some other people like him that probably see that other people are using that as a, not an excuse. I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but like,
or a manipulation tactic.
Yes.
To say that, oh, I found God and I'm turned, and it's so, who knows his true motivation? He may, for all intents and purposes, thought that he found God and felt like he was a changed man. But like, this obviously wasn't the case because he killed Rebecca Gay. White left prison and moved into a trailer near Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and was engaged to a woman named Sally. He became pastor at the Christ Community Fellowship Church, which from everything I read was a pretty small little, you know, small town community church. It wasn't a big one like you see in like mega churches or even a moderate sized one. He once again, a few weeks prior to Halloween, started to have sick, twisted fantasies again after he, which he later admitted to police about having sex with dead bodies. I just, that is so gross to me. It is depraved. If you're into that, I don't know what's wrong with you. You have a screw loose. Now we're going to get into Rebecca Gay. Rebecca also lived in this community at the time. She was a very sweet girl. We'll post a photo of her. Looks just like your next door neighbor type of girl, only 24 years old. She was a mom. She had a 3-year-old boy, Conway. On Halloween night of 2012, Rebecca went missing. Alarm bells went up when she wasn't at work the next day. Cops were called and she was reported as missing. The community instantly went into action to find her. Everyone was searching for her, looking through fields and everything. In the early hours of Halloween, after drinking several beers, White walked to the mobile home of Rebecca in the same trailer park he lived in and entered the dwelling. White attacked her, hitting her in the head repeatedly with a rubber mallet until she was unconscious. He then tightened a zip tie around her neck, strangling her until she was dead. Conway was in the room, or was in the next room of the trailer when this happening, when his mom was being murdered. White then dumped Gay's lifeless body in a ditch behind some pine trees about a mile from her mobile home. After disposing of the corpse.
Question. Did he know that Conway was there?
Yes, he knew. And he knew.
And he just like left him?
We're about to get into that. So after disposing of her body, he returned to the trailer and looked after her son. He then dressed him in his Halloween costume and dropped the oblivious boy off to his father in a grocery store parking lot.
Did he like question, like, who the fuck are you?
No, because White was engaged to Rebecca's mom.
Oh my gosh.
So he killed his future stepdaughter.
Why? Oh my gosh.
It's ridiculous. It's gross. So when he was picked up by the police and taken in for questioning, investigators tried to appeal to White and told him that her body would be deteriorating and decompose in the cold, wet weather. He didn't care. A day later, John finally admitted to police that he had killed Rebecca and he gave them the exact location of her corpse. White told authorities that the murder had been fueled by pornographic videos that involved necrophilia. He added that he couldn't remember if he had had sex with her dead body, even though he removed all of her clothes. So I feel like he did.
Oh, he 100% did.
Right. Armed with this admission, authorities were determined to put John away for the rest of his life. In April 2013, the 55-year-old White was sentenced to 56 years in prison. Only 4 months later, on August 28th, White was found hanging in his prison cell just after 4 a.m. Prison officials attempted to revive the convicted killer, but it was too late. White was dead at the age of 56, and he left behind a legacy of hatred and violence towards women.
What a coward.
His son, right? His son, Gabriel, who may have summed up his late father's life the best, he said, he was completely crazy until the end. And like the sick part of this is that White told the congregation to pray for her to be found. And I like to think that God had a wicked sense of humor in this, in that when they did pray, they found her.
Yeah.
And he died.
So did he have like major mommy issues or something? Like why does he hate women?
I didn't see anything about that. I think that he more than likely had mommy issues. And then I think that there are some people who are just born with a screw loose, that there's just something about their brain that does not function correctly. Do you know what I mean?
Well, there has to be something
in their brain that is just not
and there's a lot of serial killers that had head injuries as really young children and babies, and I don't think that's a coincidence. Like Ted Bundy had a head injury. I think BTK had a head injury.
Really? I didn't know that. That's the case of Rebecca. I feel horrible for her. I feel horrible for her son. I feel bad for the mom that was living with this psychopath.
Yeah.
And who killed her crazy daughter.
How guilty would you feel
as a mom, right?
Yeah.
Frick.
Okay, so I found an article that lists the known serial killers, murderers that had head injuries as a child. The Night Stalker's on there, John Wayne Gacy, Son of Sam. Let's see.
I'm surprised there hasn't been like studies done on this.
The Highway Stalker, BTK. I'm pretty sure Ted Bundy's not on there, but
he had other issues. Wasn't he an incest baby?
Was he? I don't think he was.
Am I making up facts?
I think so, because I watched quite a few documentaries on him and I don't remember that coming up.
Oh, I don't want to type in the words Ted Bundy incest baby. Oh, gross. I'm going to be flagged by the FBI at this point for the things I've Googled for this podcast. Oh, right here. If it wasn't messed up enough, Ted's grandfather, Sam Cowell, is rumored to be his biological father. Although it was never confirmed, if the rumor is true, that would make Ted Bundy the product of incest.
Oh, okay. So it's never, that's probably why it's not in a documentary, is because it's just speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think he had a head injury as a child, but they did remove part of his brain after he was executed to test it.
He's another person that said he turned to God. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I don't think you have a soul at this point.
There's quite a few Bundys around here. And I've always been very curious to ask if there's any relation, but I feel like it's inappropriate to ask.
Oh, they've probably gotten that their whole lives. I changed my last name. I would literally change my last name.
I would too, honestly.
Bunt. I'd be like, I'd rather be Bunt Cake than Bundy.
just one other letter. We'll just add a T, take away the Y.
Right? And I want to name my son Theodore. And I'm like, you will be a Theo, never a Ted.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to go with Theo only. So I'm going to be covering the senseless murder of the beautiful Taylor Van Diest. And this case actually takes place in Armstrong, which is a small city in British Columbia, Canada. So Armstrong was a super small town with like a population of around 5,000 during this time. So when this crime occurred, the entire place was terrified that they had a murderer amongst their community.
And I'm sure everyone was like, what is my neighbor doing?
Exactly. High like alert. I would be like looking out my window with binoculars, like, what are the Smiths doing over there? That would be too much.
Well, and I'm sure there were rumors going around about everyone at that point.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, Armstrong before that seemed like a perfect place to raise a family. It had very little crime before this. It had a lake nearby for the warm summer and like skiing and snowmobiling in the winter. It was just like a super safe and quiet place and fun mm-hmm. place to live and raise a family. So when this happened, it completely shook their community. Now, Taylor Van Diest was actually born a twin in June of 1993. Her and her sister were pretty close, and she would be around our age today. So she was born in June of 1993. So she would be our age. Taylor was incredibly intelligent and she excelled in school. She excelled at whatever she did. She was a straight A student. She loved school and learning, and she had a lot to look forward to, and her life was just starting. She was working towards getting her driver's license and had actually just graduated from high school before the crime occurred. And Taylor loved horror movies, so it's not surprising that her favorite holiday was Halloween. On October 31st, 2011, Taylor worked really hard putting on like her costume and getting it together. She had posted on Facebook a few days prior asking like, should I be a zombie or Mother Nature? And she decided on a zombie because she was into all that cool stuff. And she really went all out for her costume. She ripped up a sweater and like wore a white tank top underneath it. She wore ripped up jeans. She applied fake blood and colored in fake bruises all over her body. She like super teased her hair. She just had a lot of fun with it because this would be this would be the last year that she would go trick-or-treating. And I know like 18 is pretty old to still be trick-or-treating, but you're still essentially a kid. And she knew this would be the last year she'd be able to get away with doing it. And So she wanted to go all out for this last year. This right. night was a little different though. Typically she would go with her twin sister, but instead this year she went with her friends, Zoe and Clay. Unfortunately, Taylor had a boyfriend at the time. His name was Colton, and he wasn't able to go with them, but they still planned on making it a fun night, even without her twin sister and her boyfriend. So the plan was for the group of friends to meet up at 6 p.m. at Clay's house. And Taylor and Zoe were supposed to walk together, but for whatever reason, Taylor decided to start walking without Zoe and intended on crossing paths with her along the railroad tracks so they could finish walking together. So their plan was to like meet up, walk together. There was this shortcut by the railroad tracks that went to Clay's house. And Taylor decided to just start walking alone. And eventually she figured she would cross paths with Zoe so that they can continue walking together to Clay's house.
Well, and if you live in a small town, it feels safe. Like right. you don't think anything's going to happen. I'm sure everyone slept their doors unlocked and, you know.
Yeah, totally. And so at 6:02 p.m., Colton received an eerie text from Taylor, which said, being creeped. But it was spelled C-R-R-E-P-E-D. So obviously she was in a rush texting him this because normally she was like a pretty long-winded texter who wasn't one to just do one or two words in a text or missing a smiley face. And she was normally like a really great speller. So she wouldn't normally send a text with a typo like this. And so it really caught Colton off guard. And around the same time, neighbors actually reported hearing screams, but it's Halloween. So they didn't think too much of it. They thought that it was probably just kids having fun or playing pranks because they heard somebody yell, help. I honestly, I probably wouldn't think too much of it either on Halloween. Would you?
No.
Yeah.
Everyone's yelling. And I mean, why would you think anything different? People are scaring each other.
Exactly. So after Taylor's boyfriend receives this text message, he knew something was up. And I don't think that he saw it like straight away, but as soon as he did, he tried to reach out to her, tried to call her, tried to text her, but she never replied and she never answered her phone, which was super unlike her. So at this point, he gets into contact with Zoe and Clay to see if they knew where she was, hoping that she was just with her friends and she wasn't replying because she didn't see her phone or whatever. This obviously wasn't the case though, and the three became very concerned as to what happened to Taylor because this was just very unlike her to not be responsive and to not be showing up on time to Clay's house like they had planned. So the three of them actually got together and started driving around, I believe in Colton's car, trying to locate where Taylor was, but they weren't able to find her. Around 7:15 p.m., so about an hour later, her family got a call from Taylor's phone, but instead of it being Taylor on the other end, it was some neighborhood teenagers who had found her phone near the railroad tracks and were just trying to call to see who the phone belonged to and get it to its rightful owner, which is another like sign that this was just like a really great community because normally teens would just like steal the phone, you know?
Oh yeah, fully.
So her family then called her friends to let them know where the phone was found so that they could go to that area and start searching for her. And then at the same time, they also called authorities to let them know that Taylor was missing. Officers met Taylor's mom, Zoe, Clay, and Colton in the area where the phone was found. And so they're like looking through this area. It was kind of thick with trees and everything like that. And it was by the railroad track. So they're looking all around for her. And it didn't take long before they found Taylor at 8:45 p.m. laying face down, badly beaten, and barely clinging to life.
Oh.
She was barely 8 blocks away from her house at the time. And
oh my gosh.
Because of her zombie costume and the fake blood, it was really hard for officers to really specify what the actual injuries were. Mm-hmm. And when they arrived at the hospital, the doctors thought she had actually been hit by a train because of how badly she was injured.
It was that bad.
She had a large skull fracture at the base of her head, cuts on her lips, bruising in her mouth, a bruise on her shoulder, possibly from being like thrown to the ground, 2 broken fingers. She had a large gash on her eyebrow, and she also had defensive wounds on her body consistent with trying to fight somebody off. And then they also found, yeah.
how do you get bruises in your mouth?
I don't know. When I explain what she was beaten with, it'll kind of make sense. I don't know.
Okay.
She had defensive wounds on her body consistent with trying to fight somebody off. So at that point, they also see like strangulation marks around her neck. And so they realize at that point that she obviously wasn't hit by a train and that she was attacked by somebody, and that she tried to fight back so hard that there were scratch marks from her own nails of trying to pry off her attacker's hands that were around her throat.
Oh,
yeah. Her pupils were unresponsive, which obviously meant that she suffered some very traumatic brain injury. And even if she did wake up, the medical staff was unsure what her quality of life would be at that point. And not only that, the hospital staff was not equipped enough to deal with the amount of injuries and the the amount of injuries and like their severity. They were not equipped to help her.
Right.
And like, remember, it's an extremely small town. I think we have here where I live 4 to 5 times the amount of people where I live, and our hospital sucks and it's not equipped deal with somewhat minor cases. So they ended up having to transfer her to another hospital. And unfortunately, less than 24 hours after her attack, she tragically passed away from her injuries. So she fought hard to live, but even then they weren't exactly sure what her life would look like after this. So it's sad. After she passed away, the search was on for this monster that was living among them. And authorities began their investigation, and they tried to keep it pretty hush hush because they didn't want to release a whole bunch of details surrounding like her injuries or anything like that. Because if they were to find somebody question them and they had a similar, you know, story or whatever, they knew that they had their person. So like I said, Taylor fought super hard to survive. And in doing so, DNA evidence was found underneath her fingernails from when she was trying to fight back. Okay. And yes. Also remember, if anybody is being attacked, make sure that you are scratching this person, doing whatever you can, because that DNA evidence, even if you don't survive, God forbid, will help solve your case. So,
well, and then scratches on them. Because if you have DNA under your nails, they're going to have scratch marks.
Right. So scratch the heck out of somebody if you are being attacked. And so her DNA sample, the DNA sample that they found under her nails, was linked back to an unsolved case of a sex worker who had been raped at knife point in 2005. Thankfully, the victim of the sexual assault came forward and provided enough information to a sketch artist in hopes that somebody would recognize him. I am a little annoyed that they didn't have her do a sketch of the person in 2005 when she was attacked, because I feel like,
right, because what is she going to remember at that point?
Right. Luckily she did remember quite a bit. But I mean, he could have been arrested a long time ago for this. So yep. In a neighboring town of Cherryville, residents who saw the sketch recognized them as Matthew Forster. And I have seen so many different ages for this man. So during this time that the crime occurred, I've seen between the ages of 25 and 32. So we're just going to go with that. He was in his mid to late 20s, early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So Matthew still lived with his dad, Stephen, who was also no stranger to the law. In fact, his charges traced back all the way to the 60s. None of them had sexual assault related, but he still had quite a few list of charges himself, like grand theft auto and like drug charges, stuff like that. And authorities were actually able to get his cell phone records that indicated that Matthew had in fact been in the area at the time of the murder. And when they tested his DNA, boom, it was a match to both the sex worker and Taylor.
Good. So, they got him.
Yeah. So apparently Matthew told his dad about what went down that evening, and Stephen went ahead and got his son a new identity so that he could just move away and pretend like nothing happened.
What?
Yep. And for only $500, a Canadian resident sold the Forsters his identity with the agreement that it would only be for a couple of months, but he gave them his SIN, which is their version of the social security number. He gave them like a driver's license and like an old bank card. Yeah. Totally sold his identity like a couple months for only $500.
That's ridiculous.
I know. It's crazy.
Isn't that illegal? Could that be illegal or no, because you're doing it willingly?
I think both ends of it would be illegal, honestly. You can't just like sell your identity to a criminal knowingly or unknowingly, you know? I don't know.
Is there laws about that?
I honestly don't know. I feel like I mean, you get in trouble for stealing somebody's identity, but I've never heard of somebody willingly selling their identity though.
Right.
Other than this case. So who knows? And who knows, because it's in Canada, what their laws are like. So police were able to intercept some phone calls between father and son, which goes into detail about getting Matthew a new identity, because the one that they had purchased wasn't going to work for much longer. And between March and April of 2012, both Matthew and Stephen were finally arrested. They were tracking them like via their vehicles and like those phone calls. They were able to get enough information to arrest them. While in custody, Stephen actually bragged to an undercover cop in a holding cell that he had helped Matthew get a new identity and gave him advice on how to evade arrest, which obviously worked really well for him. And during the trial, it was brought to light that not only was she strangled by Matthew's hands, but also with a shoelace. And Matthew admits that he was drinking and smoking weed on that Halloween night when he went to Armstrong looking for a woman to have sex with. He claims that he was looking for consensual sex, but with his track record, I think he would have just done whatever he wanted to, honestly. Yeah. So he saw Taylor, and when she declined his advances, after they had talked a little bit, he proceeded to beat her with a metal flashlight and a steel pipe.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. He disposed of the flashlight and shoelace on his way out of town, but he left the steel pipe behind. I think her head was literally like laying on the steel pipe. So I'm guessing with the amount of blunt force trauma, that's what caused the bruises inside of her mouth, because they are such like a smaller item. They're not like a huge one. That's where I would see how that happened.
I agree.
Stephen was only sentenced to 3 years in prison for the role he played in hiding a fugitive and knowing about the crime and not saying anything. Matthew was charged with first degree murder, but he did appeal it, and he was granted a new trial. And he tried to sway the jury that he was guilty of manslaughter and not murder, because his intention was to have consensual sex with Taylor and not to hurt her or murder her.
I'm sorry, no.
Mm-hmm. He was then convicted of second degree murder with life in prison, but he's eligible for parole after 17 years. So in 2029, in 2029, he will be eligible for parole.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
Did he get charged for the rape of the sex worker?
We'll get to that in just a second. So he was also charged for the assault in 2005. And they were able to charge him for another assault that occurred 6 months before the 2005 incident. And during that assault, he broke into his neighbor's home where their teenage daughter was home sleeping. He was wearing a face mask when he entered the home. He took her out of her bed, threw her up against the wall twice, hard enough to split her head open. And then he freaked out and left before anything else happened. And the crazy thing about Canada's sentences is they do them concurrently, where in the US we do them consecutively. So for example,
so he's serving here, he's oh fucking A.
Mm-hmm, he would have been sentenced to 6 years for each of those assaults, which would mean he would serve 12 years, but in Canada he only served six because he served both of those assault sentences at the same time plus the 17 years for Taylor's murder. So essentially he's not even serving time for the assaults.
These are violent crimes against women.
Yep.
What is Canada doing? I know Canada is like messed up and all, but what are they doing? This is ridiculous. Why would they not serve consecutive sentences? It's like he, like you said, it's like he never got sentenced for the other crimes.
No, because I mean, they sentenced him, sentenced to life in prison for Taylor's, but eligible for parole after 17. And so, I don't know. It's just, it's bizarre to me. And I would,
why would you ever, it's, go ahead.
And it's like the same thing with your case. I don't think these are the only crimes he committed.
No.
When you are that,
he got caught.
Right. When you were that aggressive with people, I mean, he's just a bad man. And he's capable of doing heinous crimes when he's eligible for parole, because that's in 8 years. He is not going to be that old.
No, I'm just really confused. Just can't, like, what is going on in Canada?
I don't know, because even with the,
why would you give him parole when he's done multiple violent crimes?
Well, it's the same thing when we covered Robert Picton's case of the, you know, the Good Times Piggy Palace or whatever. Like, he didn't serve enough time for the people that he murdered. So
that is ridiculous.
I think Canada should do some revising on their sentencing and their, like, justice system, because it's not justice at all.
Well, and then Canada has a huge issue with Indigenous, like, tribal women going missing too.
Right.
Like, a huge issue. There's like hundreds of missing cases where they just go missing and then nothing happens.
Right. And we have that problem too, like in like the Minnesota area and everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Women are just going missing in Minnesota.
Like those Midwest that are close to Canada, there is a lot of Indigenous missing women. A lot.
What is going on?
I don't know, but I think there are underground tunnels and there's a lot of
sex trafficking
going on. That's just my theory, but yeah,
we need to do an episode and get into it.
We really do, because it's insane and tragic. Very tragic. I'm hoping that after those 17 years the courts are like, nah, you can stay in there. But the prisons and everything, no matter where you are, I feel like are super overcrowded, so they're probably going to let them out.
I don't understand why there's not, like, you have these people who smoke pot that are in prison because they have pot, and then you have people who are legitimately a danger to society who have shown repeated, like, a pattern of being violent. Yep. That we are just letting out. And I'm like, why are we not letting out the freaking hippy dippy pot smokers who had some marijuana in their pocket or trafficked in like 2 pounds of pot from a different state? This is the issue.
There needs to be some changes, because, you know, pedophiles shouldn't be getting less time than
hot smokers.
Yeah.
The people who go sit in their garage and right. So he'll be eligible for parole in 2029.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That family has to just feel so violated that he is eligible for parole.
Oh, they're sick over it. Her mother is just beside herself. She's glad that, you know, her daughter got justice, that he was arrested.
Oh, and she's a twin. Fuck.
She's a twin.
I feel so bad for twins when they lose their twin, because I think that is a pain.
Oh,
that's different than like losing a sibling. I think it goes
way deeper. You deeper. Were with them
for every your whole single life. You've known aspect. Nothing else but them.
Yeah.
Have you seen those videos of like the twins when they're born and they're like initially separated because they have to be, and then they put them into like the little bassinet thing together and they instantly stop crying and they like hold each other. It's so sweet.
I know.
So sweet.
Oh yeah. Twins.
That poor girl.
I know. It's so sad. What a
sicko.
Before we end this, did you see the Kansas high school situation?
No.
So
maybe. No.
So I think it was like a homecoming assembly, right?
Yes, I did. What the
fuck is going on?
What? And then apparently that guy, when he was leading a field trip, the principal, a girl got raped or sexually assaulted.
And what is going on? They didn't do anything about it.
And then I'm like, what are these teenagers doing thinking this is appropriate? What are the adults in the situation doing thinking this? If we did that at my high school, we would have been expelled, Haley.
Oh, 100%.
I got dress coded for a skirt that was like literally over halfway down my thighs. But because I have longer arms than what normal for my body,
not like fingertip length.
It wasn't fingertips. And then I tried to be like, listen, I have long arms. It would be down to like, this is ridiculous. And they're like, no, it's your arm length. And I'm like, my arms are in, this makes me sound like I have like weird
orangutan arms.
I have longer legs and arms and I have a very short torso.
That's what I was going to say. A short torso with longer limbs. She's proportionate, yes, people. I promise.
I don't look weird.
She's beautiful.
I'm not like, what are those dolls? The Gumbies, where it's like, my gosh. I don't look like that, but I got dress coded, and on any other person, the skirt would have been perfectly fine. But because of like my leg length and my arm length, it looked short, and I had to put on these ugly purple used shorts that they gave to kids who were dress coded for the rest of the day. But these kids are twerking in lingerie and bathing suits on adult men, might you add. I don't know. I think it's gross.
I do too. Well,
and what were the kids thinking that was like a cool thing to do?
Exactly. Like, I would feel super uncomfortable giving my teacher a lap dance.
Yeah, but and then I think of like the kids though that were like jokesters in my high school, where they were like, "Oh, this is funny," but
I don't know.
I think as women, we'd probably feel uncomfortable just given that we're women. I don't know. Either way, it was so wildly inappropriate. The adults in the situation were not being adults. The minute they walked out there, it should have ended. That should have been like the last of it. Performance shut down. We're not doing this. This is inappropriate. You need to go change. But that didn't happen. And now it's national news. And
then they posted the pictures on, like, the school posted the pictures.
Facebook page. And I'm like, you have a young boy twerking on you. How fuck are you doing?
What is wrong in your brain that you think this was?
And then I think they were surprised by like the outrage. Just like, why?
I think all of you probably need to get your heads checked, because if I was a parent, I would lose my ever loving mind.
Oh, wait for that board member meeting. That's going to be a doozy.
Right?
I'm assuming everyone got put on administrative leave.
I would hope so. I'd be like, school's canceled right now.
Right?
But I mean, he's like the principal. Refresher. He's what, the principal and the mayor?
Yep. Small town. That has to be the world's smallest town. Poor Kansas. They're looking real bad.
Oh, God. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to tune in on Wednesday for our weekly episode. We're going to give a couple of days between our episodes. I know we were going to do Monday, but we're going to break it up a little bit. So Wednesday, our other episode will be up. Hopefully everybody has a fun and safe Halloween. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and TikTok, both at Dark and Deadly Pod. You can also send us a Gmail with case suggestions to darkanddeadlypod@gmail.com. Also, if you love our podcast as much as we do, you can help us out by rating us 5 stars on Apple, sharing our episodes with family and friends, and interacting with us on our socials. Also, you should share what you're wearing for Halloween on our Instagram, because I want to know.
Yes, please. We'd love to see it.
Have a good night, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.